Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
You're listening to the Sisters in Loss podcast, a faith-based podcast that spotlights Black women who replace silence with storytelling around pregnancy and infant loss and infertility. Black women experience miscarriage and stillbirth 4 to 5 times more likely than white women, according to the NIH and CDC. Whether you've experienced a miscarriage, infant loss, stillbirth, are trying to conceive, or have an infertility diagnosis, you will learn about resources and strategies to heal, gain clarity, peace, hope, and find an empowering path forward after loss. I'm your host, Erica M. McAfee, and you will hear me interview sisters in loss who have healed from such a painful and traumatic experience by sharing their testimonies and stories to inspire and help others turn their pain into their purpose. Now let's get started.
Well, welcome, Vanessa, to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. I would love for you to share a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Okay. Well, I currently am the creator and founder of the Ahmaud Youssef Awareness and Prevention Project. I started my nonprofit shortly after the loss of my son in hopes to gather more information as to why African-American women, you know, don't really get paid attention to much in the medical field, and just to, you know, find out more things concerning our high risk factors as it pertains to pregnancy.
Now, take us back on your journey to motherhood and share with us your lost story.
Okay, wow. I haven't talked about this in so long, and I knew that when I had signed on to do the podcast that, you know, it would kind of bring up these feelings that I'm kind of still working through. I'm still on my journey. It's only been a year. But my journey to motherhood started back in August of 2018. At the time, my husband was only my boyfriend, but we got the news that we were pregnant. And before conceiving, I was not too good to myself as far as, you know, I had a lot of anxiety and my diet was poor. Like, everything was just terrible. And when I found out I was pregnant with my son, I completely changed everything. I started eating better. I cared a lot more about my space, my mental space, my spiritual space. And I carried him to full term to about 9 months, 36 weeks. And that's when I had a stage 4 placenta abruption. So the journey up until that point was extremely peaceful. I did not experience anything that any of my sisters or my friends or, you know, women that I've randomly met on the street, like, they would always tell me, like, you know, you're going to get morning sickness, and, you know, these things are going to happen. And I promise you, the entire 9 months, my baby was so good to me. I did not have any morning sickness. I think the most I had to deal with was sciatica. And, you know, I thought I was doing everything right with changing my diet and, you know, just protecting the space around me, because, you know, everyone was telling me that, you know, how you feel when you're pregnant, you know, you're going to manifest that into your child. And I so badly didn't want my son to be anxious or emotional. And, you know, those are the things that I was dealing with before I was pregnant with him. And, you know, I locked in on being better to myself for him. And I tell everyone all the time that my son saved my life, because I really don't think I would have changed as fast without him. And when the abruption happened, it kind of just, you know, it blew up my world.
So I would love for you to share with us just how that abruption came about. What were the signs that you had? And then what did you do throughout that whole process?
Here's the thing. I am a 32-year-old Black woman, and I have never had the flu, never had anything serious happen to me. So when I went through my pregnancy so seamlessly, like so smoothly, I wasn't, you know, negating the fact that, you know, you are pregnant and, you know, there are, you know, pregnancy symptoms that, you know, they test you for diabetes. They always look at your blood pressure when you come in. They weigh you. They make sure there's no protein in your urine, like all that good stuff. But when the abruption happens, it's in the name. Like a placenta abruption happens spontaneously. And the signs do show up. But in my experience, through my prenatal care, I wasn't told about a placenta abruption. They never once explained to me that I was even at risk for it. And when it happened to me, I had a lot of questions. Initially, when it happened, of course, you don't really understand. They always tell you, you know, be careful of spotting. Like if you're bleeding, like go to the emergency room. My son was, I was maybe 2 or 3 weeks from my due date. And, you know, my husband and I thought, he's going to come early anyway. So I was having my, you know, Braxton Hicks contractions and I was thinking like, okay, he's coming. So the night that it happened, I remember I ate a salad and then later that night I started to feel really lightheaded and I knew that that wasn't normal. So with feeling lightheaded, I got up, I walked around, I drank some water. And when I sat down, I started to feel really dizzy. So I called my mom. And she told me that I started to experience contractions while on the phone with her. And she told me like, okay, well, you know, you need to drink some water. You need to sit up. You need to make sure, you know, that you're not going into labor because you are close to your due date. So she gave me all of those signs. My mom's a nurse. So, you know, I felt safe with her instructions, but it got so bad that I disconnected my call with her and I felt this rush of like water. And in my thought, I'm like, okay, oh my God, he's coming. But when I checked to see what was going on. And I looked at my hands and it was covered in blood. And the amount of blood that was coming out scared me. So my husband popped right up and carried me to the car. We weren't that far from the hospital. So he drove me to the first hospital that we went to because I had to be transferred. The hospital that we had planned to have our son at wasn't a trauma hospital. And I think that's very important, like to let your patients know, like if the hospital is even can even deal with, you know, a trauma or anything traumatic happening, if your baby would need to be in a NICU, like those things are important to know. So as soon as I got there, they took me to a room and told me they checked the baby, they checked me, and they told me that they couldn't find his heartbeat. And in that moment, I remember laying on the bed that they had me on, and it was so many people in the room. Now, mind you, I am bleeding out. And by the time I got to the hospital, I had already lost 2 liters of blood. And so it was really bad. And, you know, they explained to me that, you know, a baby could lose oxygen in the first 4 minutes of, you know, a placenta abruption. And we had got there in 7 minutes. So when they told me they couldn't find his heartbeat, I was already like drugged up from them, like trying to slow the bleeding down, that I didn't really have an emotional reaction. I almost didn't believe it because I'm like, I still look pregnant. I still feel pregnant. Like he's still in there. So you can't tell me that you can't find his heartbeat. Like you need to try harder. So immediately, like after that moment went by, it's like I'm looking at everyone's faces and they look so sad. And it still didn't register to me that he was gone. So they had to move quickly because they couldn't stop the bleeding. So they rushed me to a hospital that was close to that one that deals with trauma patients. And I remember them moving me so much, like moving me to different rooms and putting me on these different beds. And I remember someone telling me at the time, because it's so like choppy because I was in and out. I was vomiting. I had a fever. Like everything was, it just felt terrible. And I remember them telling me that, okay, you had a placenta abruption. And in order for you to be cured of what's happening, because placenta abruption is offset by preeclampsia, which is hypertension. So basically my blood pressure was elevated. It was extremely high. And they said, in order for you to be cured of this, we have to deliver. Still didn't register in my mind that, you know, my son was gone. And, you know, they're prepping me like a regular delivery. They're giving me an epidural. You know, they're taking my blood pressure. They're putting me together, giving me different types of drugs to help me get dilated. They had to induce my labor. All the while, I am still bleeding out. So by the time I got to the second hospital, I had lost upwards to 4 liters of blood. And I was literally like knocking on the door to like losing my life. They were telling my mom and my husband, like, keep her awake. Those memories are kind of vague because I just remember pushing. And when I delivered Ahmad, like my son's name is Ahmad. When I delivered him, they let me hold him. And I wouldn't let him go, because that was when it hit me that he was gone, because he didn't open his eyes. You know, he wasn't breathing. He was still warm, but the medical term for it would be a stillbirth. And I just didn't believe any of this. So by the time I was able to like release him from my arms, they cleaned him up and, you know, they wrapped him up and put him in the little bed next to me. And because I had so many different kinds of drugs in me, as far as, you know, helping me with pain and trying to slow down the blood, I had multiple blood transfusions that day, and I had organ failure. My kidneys failed on me. My liver failed on me. I had terrible vision. Like I had more than like the normal, you know. It was just really unbelievable to know that such a traumatic experience, like losing that much blood, you know, could put your body in such a weird space. So after all that, when they took him away and, you know, everything calmed down, I was in the hospital for about 5 days. When I came down from all of the things that numbed me emotionally, you know, doctors were coming in and out to check on me and tell me what had happened. So when they sat down with me, it was like, you know, this is a placenta abruption. This is why it happened. The only thing that I could say to myself is, how did this happen? And how did no one catch this? Because upon coming home from the hospital, I did research. I looked up what a placenta abruption was for myself, and I looked at how it can be prevented. Now, once the act has happened, once the placenta abruption has happened, there's no way of stopping it. There are different levels to it. There's all the way up to stage 4. So if your placenta is torn from your uterus at least 1 centimeter, there's a way to save both mother and baby. If you're at a stage 4, then it is severe and either one or no one is surviving, mommy or baby. So my situation was a stage 4, and it took them a while to stop the bleeding for me. They had to literally stuff balloons inside of me to stop the bleeding. And when I got to a space where I realized, you know, not only did I survive pregnancy and I delivered my son vaginally the normal way, he was fully formed, he was ready. I basically survived, and you know, my fight with death. And so I felt strong and defeated all at the same time. When I got home from the hospital, I was in bed for months. Like, my husband had to pull me out of bed to shower, to eat, to just sit outside and have sun on my skin. But I didn't want to do anything because I couldn't understand why this happened to me. And then I remember my prenatal care. Every time I went to see my OB, she was forcing me to think about getting a flu shot. She was not answering my questions thoroughly. She dismissed a couple of things that I had asked for. And when my abruption happened, the doctor explained to me that the bleeding was behind the placenta. And with extra monitoring, like extra ultrasounds, they would have been able to catch it. So from my last appointment, which was only a week and a half apart from the next one that was supposed to happen, something strange happened. I had seen the doctor that one day, everything was fine. And then literally 2 days before my next appointment, I have an abruption. So it just didn't make sense to me. And when I finally, you know, had sufficient research, I realized that this could definitely be prevented. Most definitely. I went through my first, like, racial, you know, neglect medically at the expense of my son. So I'm just now in a space where I want to advocate for women who don't know the questions to ask their doctors, who are afraid, who, you know, don't know what to say, because I'm one that's not afraid to say how I feel. But when you get into a space where you're sitting in front of your doctor, you feel like I'm supposed to trust you because my life and my baby's life is in your hands. So if I'm eating too many things with salt in it, you need to tell me. If I am not drinking enough water, you need to tell me. But just because you feel okay and just because everything seems okay doesn't mean that there aren't symptoms. It doesn't mean that there aren't signs. They're just not looking at them for you. They're just not telling you that this is going on with you. Everything was such a rush going through that doctor's office. I'll never forget. I would come in, sign in, I would get weighed. They would tell me to pee in the cup. They'd measure my belly, weigh me, and send me home. This is my first pregnancy, but this cannot be all of it. It just can't. And where you live, like, your zip code determines where your doctor is going to be. It's almost as if your insurance doesn't even matter anymore. It's just where you are, your community. And I know that when I was fighting through my depression after losing my son, I felt like I died in that room, even though they saved my life. Because today I feel like such a different person. And it took me a long time to accept the fact that I have to take the time to get to know this new me. Everything was different. I thought that there were things that I loved to do before my son, and even while I was pregnant with him. And when I got home from the hospital, I felt like all of my gifts were just a dream. I didn't know how to dance anymore. I didn't know how to write. I didn't know how to smile. And a good friend said to me, the best way to fight your depression is to do the things that you feel like you can't do because of it. And it didn't hit me for real until, you know, I allowed myself to feel in those moments. If I didn't feel like getting up, I didn't get up. But I told myself, I encouraged myself and said, you could be here, but don't stay here. I read books. I fought with God every day to where I couldn't get on my knees to pray for almost a year. Like, I'm just now getting back into my journey, my spiritual journey, my walk, my faith, because it was gone. It was gone for a while because I didn't understand how he could allow me to carry my baby full term. And then, like, right at the finish line, just take him away. I had a lot of anger, a lot of disappointment, a lot of sadness, a lot of sadness. And when I started to like get up on my own. I remembered what my friend told me. And, you know, I got back into my dance classes and it felt so good to have something to do. The weight that I had gained from the pregnancy was, I was used to having all that weight on me. So I felt, you know, unattractive. I felt like I wasn't being good to myself because I just allowed my depression to take over my life. But when you have the right people around you, and I don't mean people who say, I'm here for you if you need me, call me if you need me. I mean people who show up, no matter what you say to them. I had friends that drove to my house from different cities and knocked down my door and brought me groceries and did my laundry and cleaned my house. And I think the reason why I survived this experience is because they didn't let me forget who I am, and they didn't let me forget that I was loved. I gave up on myself for the first time in my life, and they looked at me and said to me that my life isn't only just important to me. And that touched me. And I had to say, you know, without people who show you that they're for you in your life, this could have gone any direction. You know, there we go through these experiences that change our lives and we don't know what it's going to do to us. And we feel so many things that we feel like people don't understand, because I was encouraged to join a group. And I am a sister-in-law along with other women who have lost their babies from a miscarriage or, you know, an abortion or a placenta abruption like myself. But I had specific pain, and I didn't want to sit with other people that were talking about their pain and their loss through other ways besides mine. I couldn't talk to another woman who lost their child from a miscarriage versus a woman who lost her child from a placenta abruption. And that was such a crazy thing to think, because it's loss. It's all loss. But those feelings are valid. Those feelings are valid. You can't tell me that, you know, if I got into a car accident and I lost my legs, I can't sit and talk to someone who's been in an accident with me, but they didn't lose anything. Like, yeah, we experienced the same thing, but my experience is a little bit different. So I turned down all groups. I turned down everything because I was just so upset that I couldn't really express how I felt without someone saying, oh, I get it. I understand. But you don't. I needed someone who understood. So I stumbled upon a book called Journey to Peace by Kiana Barnes. And she lost her first child, and then I lost mine. I reached out to her, and talking to her, she helped me to realize that loss is only physical and your baby lives on through you. When you are experiencing things like this and other women have experienced a loss, no matter how they did, it still takes a piece of them. So not only did I have to humble myself in my pain, I had to remember that, yeah, Vanessa, you're not alone. There's other women who feel what you feel, regardless of how it happened. People still take their own lives because of things like this. Women never go back to the way they used to be because of this. It's so heartbreaking. Like, this community of sisters in loss, this community is important because we need each other. But I believe that if I could help other women who have gone through this find some sort of peace of mind, if I could help women who are carrying their first child, their second child, their fifth child, if I could help them gather all of the information that they need because they're not getting it from their doctors, if I could help a woman never have to hear those words of not being able to hear their child's heartbeat, I will feel like my son's death isn't in vain. Because no one told me these things. No one told me I was at risk for anything. But I know that my community is, you know, forgotten, not thought of, discarded. And the first step is taking care of each other. The first step is rebuilding the Black family, strengthening that sisterhood. I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to save a life.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Your story brings up so much of my own personal story, because I also have experienced a placenta abruption. My son Maxwell, and it also was a stage 4, and you know, we are both here as living testimonies to share our stories. My son has a disability as a result of the placenta abruption. But, you know, one thing I can say is that, you know, I feel the same way you do. Like, you know, as far as God really giving us a second chance to do this, to be able to give back in a certain way and help other women who don't have the voices to say and really understand exactly what's happening to their bodies. So yes. I thank you so much for sharing your journey with us. I would love to know any other tools or resources or books or things that you use to help you, that has helped you in this last year, right? To get to a place of healing.
Truly, each individual is different. So like what works for me may not work for the next person. And I am extremely stubborn. And like I said, like I turned down all of those groups because I felt like it was not enough for me. But literally the only book I read was A Journey to Peace by Kiana Barnes. And it's a 30-day kind of like journal that you read. There's a scripture. And then she also shares her story. You'll have a scripture and then she'll say like how to apply that scripture to your life. And it's 30 days. So like day one whenever you start reading it, day one, you read that scripture, you read how you apply it to your life, and then you do your best to manifest that. And I didn't read that book until I was not as angry anymore. And, you know, people always say when it comes to grief, it's not sequential. Like it's not happening in order. It's like you're at stage 1 and then you're at stage 10 and then you're at stage 5. Like it happens all over the place. And I didn't believe that was a real thing until it happened to me. Like one day you're so angry at the world and you're disappointed in yourself because you thought you were doing everything right. And then you start reliving the guilt. And then, you know, the next day you could be okay. The entire day you could just be fine. And then right at night you fall apart. I cried and I promise you, this is not an exaggeration. I cried every single day from the day I got home from the hospital until I quit my job, which was 8 months after being home from the hospital. Every day. I cried every day. And I was just waiting for the one day that I wasn't going to cry. Like, what? I could be having a normal day, driving to work, I'm in tears. At work, I'm in tears. On the way home, I'm crying. But I had to be patient with myself. I had to tell myself that it was okay. Every day, I counted the days up until 365. Of how long I had been without my son, of what he would have developed into, even just being a year old, who he would have looked more like. I counted the days. I started writing again. And that's one thing that I want to share with people, like whatever gifts that the Most High has given you, it'll feel like it's not there anymore. But all that's happening is that you're living in real time and you're experiencing. So if you are like a writer like myself, those gifts don't just go away. Anything that the Lord gives you is yours. Now, you may forget about it. You may even bury it, but it's still your gift. I didn't write for a long time. And when I finally allowed myself to be free of being angry, I wrote so many things. I wrote letters to Ahmad. I wrote poems. And I knew that I was just one step closer to being okay, because the pain doesn't, you'll never forget. You'll never forget. But you'll start to learn how to live with it and not make excuses behind it. So while you're on your journey, learn who this new person is, because you're definitely not the same. But everything about you, the foundation, that's still who you are. You're just, these pieces are just added. Be patient with yourself and know that tomorrow is coming. Feel everything. Feel every single thing. Don't let anybody tell you to get over it, because I had people tell me that. I had to quit my job because of the insensitivity of the company. And I wasn't, my mental health was more important than that job. So in this moment of healing, know that you are the most important thing. You are. And as you rebuild, know that, yeah, it's going to take some time. Day by day, be patient with yourself. Forgive yourself. If you feel low, like beneath the ground, go as low as you possibly can, but don't stay there, because the only place you can go from there is up. But self-love is definitely important.
Yes, that's great advice. And for those of you all who want to listen to more of Kiana's story that you mentioned, I had Kiana way back in the beginning of the podcast.
Really?
Episode 31.
Episode 31. Awesome.
She is amazing. So go back, listen to her episode and more about the book that Vanessa shared, Journey to Peace, and her story. So thank you for talking about Kiana, because she is amazing. And definitely give her props for her book and her journal.
Oh, yes.
They definitely help out the community and myself as well. So I would love for you to share, kind of already took us to church with the advice on self-care and showing yourself some self-love. But as you know, we are in the midst of a pandemic. And as we're recording this podcast, we are in the midst of protests and uprising and talking about just Black lives in general. I would love for you to leave some encouraging words with our listeners on what can they do in this time of uncertainty. So many treatments got canceled because of COVID. Some women are pregnant after loss and they're going through this journey with some anxieties and fears. What encouraging words can you leave with our listeners during this time of uncertainty?
Well, I guess that's a good segue to let you guys know. The Imagi Self Awareness and Prevention Project, we specialize in, you know, being a bridge, you know, just being a charitable service project that will contribute to bringing awareness to women of the high health risk in the medical field. So basically, if there's something that you're nervous about, you could definitely contact us and we'll help you figure out the things that, you know, you shouldn't, because you're pregnant. You shouldn't be stressing about anything. The tips that I have, I just recently started vlogging my journey to conceiving again. And I have to be a certain weight before I conceive again. And this is a part of the information that I found out post my loss. You know, getting a blood test and an allergy test, figuring out, like, you have to know your blood type. You have to. Getting an allergy test, you can know, like, what your body is compatible with as far as, like, different herbs. I most definitely only drink teas that are natural. So if you're a tea drinker, natural teas, like, literally no sugar, no honey, nothing. Like, if you're drinking ginger tea, it's straight up ginger tea. But as far as tips to, you know, keep yourself centered during this time, is just remembering your source of power. If you are spiritual, know that the Most High is your source of power. Know that your family is your source. You are the source, because as Black women, we have the power to heal ourselves. And with a loss, you forget who you are. And that's what the enemy wants you to think, that this didn't happen for you because you're not worthy, because you're not special enough. But I'm telling you, you know, just as, you know, both you and I are survivors of stage 4 placenta abruptions, and that's rare. That is rare. That is almost, with the statistics, 2% of women survive a stage 4 placenta abruption. So just know, as a Black woman, as a mother, you know, your body goes through so many things when you're pregnant, but that's what you are made for. Everything that's happening right now is all for change. So just rest in knowing that when all of the dust settles, everything is going to be Black. everything, our dollars, we got to give back to ourselves. We definitely will be taken care of because we're starting to give more and give back to our communities. And that I love to see that. I love to see our people coming together for a change because we deserve it.
Awesome. I love it. So where can we connect with you after this episode? Drop all your socials for us.
Yes. So my personal social is Vanessa, Y-R. So it's just the spelling of my name, V-A-N-E-S-S, and then dot A-Y-R. And the project social for Instagram is AYR.project.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Vanessa, for sharing your story and your light with the Sisters in Lost community. It has truly been a blessing.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. For show notes, go to sistersinlost.com. To stay connected with us and join the Sisters in Lost community and receive my weekly newsletter, please go to sistersinlost.com/newsletter. That is sistersinlost.com/newsletter. Please rate and review this episode, and I will talk to you next week.